ॐ गणितमिनन्दस्य जनार्जनकलाकाय चक्षुसमिलतां येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः. श्रीचैतन्यमनुविस्तां स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपगदामायं ददति सापनन्तिकाम्. Prabhupada has explained that the Bhagavad Gita is our basic preaching book, and therefore we should know it inside, outside, back to forward, front to back, etc. This basic preaching book is meant for our preaching to others, but especially meant for our preaching to ourselves. That is our prime preaching, to keep ourselves fixed in the service of Sri Guru and Gauranga, because that service will lead us to the lotus feet of Krishna, which is Prema Pamarto Mahan, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said. This is the opinion of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that the purpose of life, our existence, is Prema, to develop our love of Krishna. Therefore, Prabhupada called this movement the Krishna Consciousness Movement. Without following the principles of the Bhagavad Gita, we cannot advance. And the Bhagavad Gita is very special in that it is based on written on the intellectual platform. So we may not have great spiritual vision. We may not be exalted, advanced Vaishnavas. But yet, if we have a little bit of intelligence, by the strength of intelligence gifted to us by the Bhagavad Gita, by the mercy of Krishna, we can become situated firmly, fixedly on the spiritual platform. That is Krishna's compassion, that he spoke the Bhagavad Gita. And to speak the Bhagavad Gita, he even took his dear devotee Arjuna, who travels with him from one lila, one place to another. As Krishna is speaking the Bhagavad Gita, he even put his own devotee in illusion just so the Bhagavad Gita could be spoken. He even arranged a huge battlefield and took the entire Mahabharata, which is written in such a way that everyone will become attracted. It is about a war, a great battle, the greatest battle that ever was between members of the same family. When there is a television series about two members of the same family fighting and feuding over a kingdom, everyone will watch it because it's attractive. It's an attractive theme. So Krishna has taken this attractive theme of the politics and intrigues of the Mahabharata between king and king, prince and prince, and there is murder, there is this and that, and he has arranged this just as a prelude to the Bhagavad Gita to attract their attention. This is Krishna's compassion. To attract their attention, so our eyes are wide in expectation, so our ears are open, and our mind is fixed in attention. We, who are conditioned souls, who are interested not in serving Krishna, but conditioned soul means that our self is the center of our existence. When I decide whether I want to do something or not, my decision is based on whether I like it, whether I don't like it, whether it's good for me and my family, etc., whether it's going to be pleasing to my senses. This is how we decide things. And this type of decision making, bahirmukh consciousness, in which we have turned our back on our natural relationship with Krishna, Krishna Bhule Se Jeev. What's the next word? Anadi Bahirmukh Ate Eva Maya Tare Deha Samsarera Duk. We have turned our back on Krishna since time immemorial, since beginningless time. And therefore, we're in the material world deciding what I'm going to do based on my desires. And Krishna so kindly is giving us this Bhagavad Gita because based on our intelligence, the arguments and logic given by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, if we absorb this, we can turn from bahirmukh to unmukh, from our back to Krishna to our face to facing Krishna. And by facing Krishna, taking steps towards Krishna, we can awaken our Krishna consciousness and again be engaged in His transcendental eternal service. So this is the purpose of the Bhagavad Gita, and Krishna, out of His kindness, has spoken this. So for our own benefit, we should study Bhagavad Gita. And for our own benefit plus the benefit of others, we should preach Bhagavad Gita. Because one who preaches Bhagavad Gita, it is param kritva, Krishna explains in the 18th chapter. It is the supreme activity. And why is it the supreme activity to preach this? Because if a son has turned his back on his father, and he's acting like he doesn't know his father, the son may forget the relationship, but the father never forgets. So the father is just wishing this son will come back. And if someone, a very kind servant of the father, a friend of the father, an intimate of the father, comes and talks to the son and convinces him and places in his heart, which is bahirmukh, which has turned its back on his father, places in that son's heart the desire to again come closer to his father, how much the father appreciates that. And the father may be the most wealthy of businessmen, and the father may have billions of dollars, and he may have so many people working for him and helping him make those billions of dollars and so many servants. But who will be more dear to the father than this one simple servant who convinces the son to go back to the shelter of the father in the loving relationship with the father? So this is param kritva. And Krishna says, therefore, and one who does this and preaches Bhagavad Gita very nicely and knows, because we obviously have to know Bhagavad Gita to preach it nicely. And one who does this, mam evam saya asamsaya, evam evas yasi asamsaya, that he will come back to me, Krishna says, without a doubt. So this is our basic preaching book, both to ourselves and the basic preaching that we will do to all over the movement. So we should learn this. We should take the time to become a bhakti shastri, to study Bhagavad Gita, to know it very deeply, not superficially, but deeply, and therefore apply it to our own lives and to help others apply it to their own lives. And that will be beneficial for us and it will help others. So Krishna very kindly arranged this Bhagavad Gita, and he put Arjuna into a state of mind where Arjuna's was so disturbed. And Arjuna wasn't the kind of person that became easily disturbed. He was a warrior. He was used to fighting hundreds of people at one time. He was a Atirati, a Maharati, a great warrior with nerves of steel. Yet Krishna put him in such a position that he was trembling like a coward and a eunuch, and tears were coming from his eyes, his skin was turning colors, and his bow, Gandiva, just dropped from his hand. And he was thinking of so many reasons why he wouldn't have to fight in this battlefield. Krishna put him in such a heavy situation. Sometimes we cringe when Krishna puts us in a difficult situation. And it's very, very difficult. We want to do one thing, even in Krishna's service, and we have so many reasons. But it's clear, because Krishna has taken away our choice or alternatives, that He wants us to do this, and we don't like it. And we wonder what we should do. And we should remember that however difficult our situation is, that our situation cannot be more difficult than Arjuna's, and we should do what Arjuna did. And what did he do? He surrendered to his guru Krishna, and he thus crossed over the ocean of the Bhagavad Gita through the process of surrender. So in the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, It is basically, we won't read all the verses, but it's basically an introduction, as Prabhupada calls it, observing the armies on the battle of Kurukshetra, because the two great armies are there and they're spread out, and it's the moment before the battle is to begin. And if any of us have ever seen a war or had an intuition of what a war is like, a battle is like, it is not a romantic thing. It is a horrible thing. There is a saying that war is hell. And for those who don't have that deep Kshatriya spirit, certainly war is hell, because there are heads cut off and arms cut off and intestines ripped out, and there is blood everywhere. So it is horrendous. And Arjuna was about to fight. He had even drawn out his bow and his arrow was out, and suddenly he asked Krishna, Senayorubhaya madhye ratam stapayame chuta. You please take my chariot and put it in the middle of the armies. Arjuna was on this side, the opposing army was on this side. The battle was about to begin, Arjuna, and suddenly, instead of shooting the bow, Arjuna said, let me see something. He wanted to see and observe and make up his mind about something. And Krishna, amazingly enough, he immediately obeyed the order of his devotee Krishna, Arjuna. And Krishna was driving the chariot of Arjuna. How Krishna serves his devotees. It's in one sense the actual essence of the Bhagavad Gita, that when the devotee serves Krishna, Krishna is not a bad master who exploits his devotee. He doesn't just take from the devotee and pays him very meagerly, minimum wage or less. Not like that at all. But Krishna actually becomes the servant of his devotee. And he bestows upon his devotee bliss that even is greater than he himself tastes. The taste that Krishna gives his devotees, his servants, the sweetness, the ananda, is so great that it attracts Krishna himself to want to taste that. So in the form of Krishna, in the form of Mahavishnu, comes as Advaitacharya, and Krishna himself comes as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to taste the sweet nectar of service to Krishna. So this is Krishna, our Lord, even though he is the master of unlimited universes. And just by the blinking of his eyebrow, or not even that, just by his ichcha shakti, by his desire, a billion universes annihilated. And what is he doing? He's driving the chariot of Arjuna, right following the order, Senayorubhaya madhye, right in the middle of the armies, you bring my chariot. So, as we said, that this, in one sense, is the actual essence of the Bhagavad Gita, that that Krishna becomes the devotee of his devotee. This is the most wonderful of all things. But it is not that Arjuna was a superficial devotee, or a devotee in name, Arjuna, or just an initiated devotee in some external way. But Arjuna had great love for Krishna. And this love of Krishna is the most powerful thing. It is more powerful than Krishna. And this is the prayojan, or the conclusion of the Krishna consciousness movement. Again, to prema pramato mahan, to bring us to that point of love of Krishna. So Arjuna asked Krishna to drive me to the midst of the armies, and Krishna obliged him, and he put him right in front of Bhishma and right in front of Drona, who are Arjuna's teachers, who Arjuna had so much respect and love for, and he understood that they were the ones on the other side, not enemies, not people who he hated. He wouldn't be killing unknown people, but those who he loved and respected with all his heart. Bhishma had protected him in his childhood. He was called Grandfather Bhishma, Pitamaha. And Dronacharya had taught him the military science of using his bow, his very bow. And there he was going to have to kill them. And Arjuna, his mind just popped, practically speaking. And he said, I can't do it. For so many reasons. And he began explaining the reasons. My whole family, the Kshatriyas, are very attached to that family for good reason. Because due to the families, the strength of the families, the Kshatriya families, law and order prevailed over the whole earth. And therefore everyone was able to live peacefully and prosperously and progress in spiritual life. And this fratricidal war between one set of brothers and another was going to annihilate both sides. And what would be the future of the family, and therefore what would be the future of the kings of the world? Finished. And Arjuna is thinking, okay, I'm going to kill thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of people to put myself and my family as king. And we're going to reign for 30, 40, 50 years and enjoy as king. And then I'm going to have to go to hell for billions of years for all the killing I've done. So it doesn't balance on the scale of time. 30 years enjoying, billions of years in hell. I don't want to fight. And not only that, he thought, when the family is ruined, the women won't be protected, there'll be vanasankara, unwanted children, and they're going to wreak havoc in the world. Children who are not trained properly, who don't have proper both parents, who are really unwanted. Another reason, and what to speak of, Arjuna said, his compassion came out and said, it's not worth it. I don't want to kill these people. The kingdom is going on. What is the need? It's being ruled by Duryodhana. There's no difficulty. So Arjuna listed reason after reason after reason after reason. Good reasons according to Shastra. But after explaining all his reasons and speaking like such a learned person, like every materialist, has so many reasons for everything that they do. I want to do it for this reason and that reason, and my family this and my welfare that. But the result of all material calculated thought in decision making is ultimately illusion. And if that illusion comes to service, it becomes confusion. And Arjuna understood that the result of all his great reasoning was that he was simply confused about what he should do. Because he was a Kshatriya, his spirit was to fight, and yet he didn't want to fight. He knew he should fight. But yet, the overwhelming situation of the armies with the thousands of people, and he was projecting a little bit into the future, and those bold men who are holding their swords and shields and arrows and bows were going to be strewn all over the battlefield with the blood coming from their wounds. But yet he was a Kshatriya, a dutiful Kshatriya. So he became confused about what to do. And he did the exact right thing. And this is the point, in one sense, where the Bhagavad Gita begins, not the instruction by Krishna, but the instruction by Arjuna's example, that ultimately, no matter how intelligent we are, no matter how good birth we are, no matter how powerful we are, no matter how intelligent we are, we cannot understand exactly what we should do on our own. And therefore, shishashteham sarimam tam prapanam. It behooves every intelligent person who has even a trace of culture, who has any true intelligence, to surrender unto a spiritual master and tell him, I need your help. And this is the reason why we should approach a spiritual master, So many times we hear that we have to approach a guru, and we hear it shouldn't be an ecclesiastical done by ecclesiastical convention or fashion, or I'm in the temple, so therefore I need a spiritual master. No! The reason why we should approach a spiritual master is we need his assistance. He's Krishna's representative. And without Krishna telling us what we should do and what our duty is and how we should progress, we will be lost. So when we understand the actual need of Guru, that we have no life, no future life, in fact, without a spiritual master, that is the right time to approach a Guru. Like the example of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, when his exalted father, Bhaktivinod Thakur, instructed him to approach Gaurakishore Das Babaji. He went, and Babaji Maharaj, knowing that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was a great scholar and that he was virtually illiterate, he said, no, people will laugh. He said that I'll ask Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and see if it's okay if I accept you as my disciple. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur came back to him. Well, what did Mahaprabhu say? Oh, I forgot to ask him. Came back again. He said no. So what did Bhaktivinoda Thakur do? Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He said that if you do not give me your mercy, I cannot maintain my life. I will kill myself. My life is useless without the shelter of your lotus feet. This is the sincerity of a disciple's surrender to an exalted spiritual master. What's it? Karuna Nahoile Kandia Kandia. What's the next one? Pananara Kiwar. That if you are not merciful to me, Kandia Kandia, with tears in my eyes, Pranana, my life, Rakibawa, I cannot maintain anymore. So naturally, the kind-hearted Vaishnava spiritual master, he will give shelter to such a sincere disciple. Because he is acting, the spiritual master is Krishna's compassion, his Kripa Shakti. This is actually explained in the 18th chapter. That Krishna, when Krishna instructs Arjuna, Sarvadamam Prityajam Amekam Charanam Braja Aham Tam Sarva Papebhyo Mukshishami Masucha, he said, I will protect you from all sinful reactions. You just surrender to me. So Krishna generally does not accept anyone's surrender directly. But Krishna tells Arjuna, in your case, I am making a special exception. I will take surrender directly from you, and I will remove all sins. Don't fear, don't hesitate, don't worry. But generally, Krishna only accepts surrender through his devotees. And therefore, the devotees are known as the embodiment of the kripa, or the compassion, or the mercy of Krishna. So when Krishna wants to be merciful to someone, he gives them the association of devotees. So Arjuna surrenders to Krishna in the second chapter. And Krishna immediately begins his work of the spiritual master by calling him a fool, Arjuna a fool. Pragyavaram chabashase. Gatasam agatasam cha nanu sochanti pandita. You are speaking asojananvasochas tvam. You are speaking as if you are a learned man, but you are lamenting for what learned people will never lament about. And what is that? That the body is going to die. You are saying that you don't want to kill these people who are lined up in front of you, and therefore out of the great compassion of your heart, you don't want to engage in the warfare, although I want you to. You are such a learned man that you are quoting Shastra to me, you fool. But what you think you can save these people from dying if you run to the forest? You think you will save their bodies from death? No, Arjuna. Ashochanan vashochastam. You are lamenting for that which is unlamentable. Pragyavana mishriva. Although you are speaking as if you are pragya, one who knows, you are actually acting and speaking to prove that you don't know anything, because gatasund agatasund cha, for the body that is dead, for those who are dead and those who are not dead, nanu so chanti pandit, the wise person will never lament. So this is the hint of Krishna as to the first part of the second chapter, that we are eternal souls. So after all of Arjuna's reasons, he surrenders to Krishna, and Krishna begins instructing him with the basic jnana of spiritual life, that we are eternal souls, that we do not die, we cannot die. It is impossible for us to die. You cannot kill someone even if you want to kill someone, because the soul is eternal. Nahanyate hanyamane sharire. It does not die. The soul does not die with the death of the body. All it does is leave the body. It is transferred to another body according to the quality of the thought at the time of death. The consciousness in the soul just leaves this body, just like the cloud or the wind will carry aroma from one place to another. When it crosses the garbage pit, it carries horrible aroma, and when it crosses the fragrant jasmine garden, it carries sweet aroma. But that aroma is not the wind. So similarly, the consciousness, which is the symptom of the soul, is carried by the subtle body from one body to another. This will be explained later on in the 15th chapter, the mechanics of this transmigration of. But there is no connection, Krishna explains, between the soul and the body. But when we identify with the body, when we think we are the body, every pain that is accrued to the body, we feel as if it was to us. But for someone who is actually situated in transcendental knowledge, he has no connection, and his leaving the body is nothing. Nothing. No fear, no anxiety, even no pain. It is just transferring. And his consciousness is just fixed on where he wants to go. This is actually how detached one can get from the body. And this is not even hard to do in one sense. Even materialists practically can do it in one form, completely detach themselves from their body. Prabhupada told the story of how Stalin, the horrible murdering Russian leader. His heart, he had some problem with his heart, and he underwent open heart surgery. And because he did not want to lose control of the country, even then, he did not take any anesthetic. And he went open, who can even imagine what it was like? But his meditation on his mission of saving, in his mind, saving Russia and making it a communist country and a progressive country was so deep that he underwent the surgery without any anesthetic, completely detached. So it is. So if our meditation on the lotus feet of Krishna and the lotus feet of our spiritual master becomes so deep. Actually, and we saw it in Prabhupada's life. He took care of his body as one takes care of a car that one really needs, but he was so detached for the purpose of the preaching movement. He did not sleep. He ate to keep it together. He worked all day long, all night long, practically speaking. He met with devotees. He would have so many preaching programs a day. And at the age of 75, 76, 77, up to 80, practically it was impossible. And yet Prabhupada did the impossible because of his deep meditation on the service to his spiritual master and the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So it is actually possible to transcend these things if our desire is deep, but it is not cheap and it can't be imitated, and we shouldn't imitate it, but we should know if our desire is deep in service, then we also can transcend. And as Krishna will explain in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that as the reflection of the banyan tree is situated on water, similarly, our situation in the material world is situated in our desire. So the process of Krishna consciousness is a process of changing our desires. And Krishna will do the rest if we change our desires. And what do we have to change our desires from? From selfish materialistic consciousness, Ishwaraham. What does that mean? Ishwaraham. Aham Bogi. I am the enjoyer. Siddhaham. Siddha, perfect. Balavan, powerful. Sukhi, happy. This is the consciousness that Krishna describes as demonic. And to change that to becoming a humble servant of Krishna and his devotees, and becoming happy, our pleasure being Krishna's pleasure. That is the change of desire that's necessary. And that is what Krishna is going to teach here in the Bhagavad Gita. And the first principle of that is that we are not the body. We are not this body. And there's no use of, someone once said, if I'm not this body, what body am I? But actually speaking, we are a spiritual body, but at this point it is quite unmanifest. So in the first part of the second chapter, Krishna explains jnana. And his arguments are very powerful. Any man or lady or child, anyone, old, young, can understand clearly with his intelligence that he is not his body, using one simple verse and one simple argument, this Dehenosminyata Dehe, Komaram Jovanam Jara, Tatadeyandra Praptiya, Diras Tatranam Uyite. That every one of us is experienced in this point, that we were once young, but we were the same, and now we're maybe youthful or middle age. Our body has changed, Komaram Jovanam. Even to jara, to old age, from boyhood to youth to old age. But through all those changes of body, we, my identity, my consciousness, who, that feeling of I-ness, of who I am, remains the same. I never change. My body changes, my intelligence changes, my mind changes, but the I-ness, the feeling of identity, never changes. So when people say, do you believe in change of bodies, reincarnation? We say, yes, immediately. And I've experienced it. I've seen it even in this life. I've changed my body. I've been reincarnated. I'll show you a picture of Burijan Das as a three-year-old, and you will agree that I've changed my body completely. And death is another change of body. Where is that body? Where is that three-year-old body now? It has died, yet I live. So using this simple one verse, the basic, simple, most fundamental point of Bhagavad Gita, that we are eternal souls, can be explained to practically any materialist. Explained and understood. And then, gradually, a little later in that chapter, on the second chapter, Krishna explains the qualities of that I-ness, the soul, the consciousness, that it is, it cannot be cut by any weapon, because Arjuna is on the battlefield and he's thinking, I'm going to, with the water weapons, drown and kill, and with the fire weapons, burn and kill, and the wind weapons, dry or blow out or something, and kill. And Krishna said, no. You cannot kill them with any of your weapons. You cannot. because the qualities of the soul are eternal. So, we're just quickly summarizing, and there's so much wonderful philosophy and connections between the verses to understand exactly what all the points that Krishna is making and how intelligently he makes them is wonderful, and it's a great study. But Krishna ends with this with another example. As a person puts on new garments, giving up old ones, the soul similarly accepts new material bodies, giving up old and useless ones. So we have attachment to our clothes, but if we get a hole in our chadar, and it may give us a little pain for a moment if it's a new chadar, if we have a new silk dhoti and a new silk chadar, and we get too close to a candle or something, we'll feel a little pain because we're attached to it. But it's not that much after all. So similarly, the body is compared to that. To a coat, chadar, clothes. And when the clothes are old, it's discarded. But the person within the clothes lives, and that is us. So Krishna explains that. And then, after explaining that jnana, that we are not the body, the most basic point in spiritual life, then Krishna takes another tact. And he explains, okay, Arjuna, if you run away from this battlefield, everyone's going to laugh at you. And for a Kshatriya, this is the worst thing that can happen because they have a particular spirit, a pride. They cannot tolerate any insult. If someone would slap a Kshatriya in the face, it would mean battle to the death. This is the specific nature of a Kshatriya, that pride. And why is that? That pride is actually necessary in a Kshatriya because his business is just to protect, to hurt. Someone takes shelter of him, an innocent person, he will protect him. And he has to fight and kill the miscreants. This is his business, to rule the kingdom. So Krishna tells Arjuna that do you think that when you run away from this battlefield, people are going to think that the other warriors are going to say, oh, Arjuna is so compassionate. He's leaving because he doesn't want to see the sight of blood of his dear ones. Or are they going to call you a coward? What do you think? They will laugh at you. And Arjuna's Kshatriya spirit immediately comes up. So on one hand he tells him, Arjuna, if you run from the battlefield, they're going to laugh at you and call you a coward. And on the other hand, if you stay on the battlefield, if you fight, you cannot lose. Because if you win, you will be the king. And if you lose, so-called lose, that means your body will die and you will go to heaven, swarga. And you will enjoy there. So if you lose, you win. And if you win, you win. And if you run from the battlefield, you can't win. You will lose. You will be considered a coward. Your fame will be lost. You will become infamous. Arjuna, the cowardly ex-warrior. Now, this is one segment of Krishna's arguments, but they are not very spiritual. They talk about going to heaven, etc. And this is not jnana. This type of allurement to do one's duty, this is called karma. Karma kanda even. Desire to enjoy material life. And the Vedic system taught in such a way that there are religious ways to enjoy. Nowadays, no one follows any religion, no principles, but everyone is trying to enjoy on their own and their own selfish way. They don't accept any authority, and the result is they become degraded. But in the Vedic system, if one enjoyed in the proper way, according to the Vedic formulas, one would become elevated and gradually advanced. So Krishna is telling this to Arjuna, but this actually has nothing to do with spiritual life. So first section of the second chapter is about karma. Excuse me, jnana, you're not your body. The second is you can enjoy. You fight to enjoy. And then Krishna explains in the next part a combination of acting based on jnana, and that is what Krishna is going to teach, detached action. Understanding that you are a soul, that you are not your body, you should act dutifully. And that is basically the a great part of the second chapter. And Krishna is going to make this point again and again throughout the remainder of the Bhagavad Gita. And this is the basic point that we, as aspiring devotees, try to emulate in the Bhagavad Gita. That don't be so attached to the results. Just do your duty. Do your duty. Don't think that you are the doer, the controller, the enjoyer. But you do your duty based on what Krishna tells you to do. And be detached from the results. And this will make one advanced in consciousness. Dutiful actions with detachment. Not renunciation of work, but renunciation of the fruit of one's work and working very hard. And again, as we spoke about, spoke in this morning's Bhagavad Gita class, this is one of Prabhupada's main points in all his teachings to his disciples, that work very hard. Work very, very hard. Don't become a lazy man. Don't become a so-called sadhu. Like there are so many in India who do nothing but sleep and eat all day long. And this is their work only. No. Work very, very hard for Krishna, but nothing for sense gratification. And then one will become an exalted devotee very quickly. Now, there's one last part of the second chapter at the end. Arjuna asks, what are the symptoms of someone who, by the process of detached work, has achieved transcendence? And Krishna explains those symptoms, that one, the mood and symptoms of a person who is not identifying with the body at all, and the basic symptoms that Krishna explains is that he is completely detached from the material world. He is almost like a just as if we're watching a documentary on television, just a story or a view of a far-off land. Krishna explains that one who is situated as a soul, he has actually no connection to the activities of the material world, and he's just watching it with no attachment whatsoever. He is not affected by his body at all, nor the activities of the material world. So that's called, that is called sthita pragya, one who is situated in knowledge. Then, after explaining all these points, Arjuna heard about jnana and that he should go to heaven, and then he heard how one is situated in knowledge, doesn't do any activities. Then, Arjuna, in the beginning of the third chapter, asks Krishna, O Janardhan, O Keshava, why do you want to engage me in this ghastly warfare if you think that intelligence is better than fruit of work? Why should I fight? Why should I do it? Now, the point that I'd really like to get to, we won't make it today. Actually, maybe, why don't we stop right here at the end of the second chapter, and tomorrow we'll cover. The third chapter is one of the most interesting chapters. Why don't we see if there's any questions at this point? Yeah.
Arjuna, that he heard from the standard succession
of. What verse is that in the first chapter?
43.
Yeah.
And what he means, saying the topic of succession, is this a spiritual type of succession, or just regarding the morality?
But this is called Kula Dharma. There's different levels of spiritual masters, and there's different levels of teachings. There is, because in the Vedic system or any system, you don't just learn something on your own. There is no self-help and self-study. If one wants to learn, one approaches a teacher. So if one wants to learn martial arts, like Arjuna was a warrior, he had to approach a teacher. So this is, and where did that teacher learn from? He had to approach a teacher. Because one doesn't get the secrets, the deep secrets of any science on his own. One gets it by the compassion of a superior. So this disciplic succession, the Sanskrit word is anushushruma, means that I've heard and followed. I'm following that which I have heard. He's not concocting this. This is the point.